You are listening to the Riverfront Church Podcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideals, and more.
We are at 900 North Orange Street at Bull Bay for Think and Drink Bible Study, and we're in our takeaway portion of the Bible study. We've had some really good food and some good drink and some good conversation. And we looked at the rest of the letter to the Corinthians and talked about a lot of issues, many of them relevant. Many of them still pressing today and complicated to understand and interpret, but also seeing them in context, giving us a blessing. So grateful for that. We have a couple guests with us today. We have, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Roger. I'm here at the Think and Drink at the Bull Bay restaurant. And my takeaway was, it was really good.
You know it's not April Fool's, right?
No, it's just fools.
Yeah, really. Well.
Hello, my name is Jean, and I'm here.
Oh, he's still going.
Really liking this takeaway.
Well,
I'm grateful for Ken Grant. Thank you.
I mean, I guess we could on takeaway talk about something that we never really got to reach really a conclusion to, because we just kind of decided. I mean, like, there's a bit of a nuance to it. You weren't necessarily here just yet, Ken. But whose house was it? I can't remember. Like, the televangelist.
Oh, Joel Osteen.
Yes, yes. Doesn't help that I just found out this guy was a person today. But, you know, had a picture of the house come up, and essentially the conversation started was,
by house, you mean?
Estate, mansion.
Yeah, giant mansion, like pools.
Small military base, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the conversation got started of like, well, you know, is this okay? Like, is this too much? How much is too much? And like, it was almost a question of like wealth and how you use it or show it in the church if you are a church leader. To which we, you know, went along to say that, you know, well, in some cases, you know, a pastor will be privileged and will have wealth, but they use that to, you know, further their ministry. Edwin brought up, you know, in a lot of developing nations or, you know, working on the terminology.
Extreme poverty. Places of extreme
places poverty. That do not have the means, if you will. The pastor will often be the only one educated. He'll be an entrepreneur. But what does he use the wealth he gets from his entrepreneurial ventures? You know, Edwin brought up the examples of maybe he's a taxi driver. And, you know, well, now he has a car to, you know, take people to the airport, bring people into, like, for mission trips, go to hospitals to see people to, you know, continue doing his duties. Versus, you know, pastor that might have a house and doesn't actually own it because the church owns it for
doesn't pay taxes
certain reasons. You know, like, you know, there's cases where that's obviously not right, but in other cases, you know, having wealth isn't necessarily a bad thing. So,
well, and of course, what's interesting about this is it's you know, that discussion is born out of, you know, a Corinthian society that valued wealth, possession, status.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once again, we have, you know, 2,000-year-old scripture that, you know, could have been written yesterday.
Because, I mean, it's applicable.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's like, what was the conclusion we reached? Well, it's not necessarily wrong. And then other times, it's definitely wrong. You know, there's, you just kind of have to play it by year on that one.
Yeah, I mean, part of it, we jokingly said, if you've got a fancier house than Warren Buffett as a pastor, maybe, you know, something to think about. But, I mean, then again, that's not true of all billionaires. You know, Bill Gates and others probably have really fancy property, so where do you, you know, where do you draw the line? But there's also my own, I mentioned my own judgmentalism. You know, it's easy for me. I don't tend to buy a lot of expensive things in general.
Unless it's a nice fedora.
Unless it's a nice fedora. You know, but that's me, and that's that. For somebody else, they might be sacrificing by not. For me, it's not a sacrifice. For me, I don't enjoy it. So it's not, you know, it's not like I'm gaining spiritual equity because I don't like to buy expensive things. It's more like, no, I just don't enjoy buying expensive things. So, for somebody else, they might not be buying these things because they want to flaunt it. They just maybe, oh, I like a really nice car, so they buy this car I would never buy in my life, right? There are nuances, although we seem to agree that some things are exorbitant, extravagant. Maybe there's a way to sort of say, where is the, what would people in general have consensus about? You know, and so for instance, in some denominations, what a pastor is paid at a church has to be the median income of that area. Now, that seems pretty reasonable, but if they're in a very high median income area, a pastor gets paid a lot of money, you know. But they argue, well, how can the pastor live in that community if they don't make anywhere near what anybody else makes it? They're priced out of the market, right? So how can they really be present to me? So, there are a lot of nuances there about wealth.
And I would go a step further. I mean, to do that pastoral caring in that community could mean you have to attend that $100 a plate charity dinner. That's part of the community. Just like another pastor, it's like you go to the Little League baseball game, you know, because that's where your parishioners are. And so it could be the same sort of thing. It's totally understandable.
Other takeaways?
Well, I guess as much as, you know, four males can talk about, you know, Paul being a feminist as our other female colleague had to.
Actually, we should probably just hold silence. 1 minute of silence. Emma has left.
Yes.
However, that brought context to something that has been misused, misinterpreted, misunderstood, you know, for so long, this whole idea of whether it's women having head covering in church or
being able to speak in church or be in leadership. But so as males, what's our takeaway in that conversation?
Here, as the youngest male in the room, I'll do the takeaway for you here.
You're not the youngest male in the room, I am.
Of course. As the 20-year-old male here, looking at these passages, you can almost take it as a, you know, so there's context behind what Paul is saying in these letters, despite, to my ears, not sounding particularly good for Paul. There's context and there's relevance to the time period, you know, Alan brought to our attention, you know, link it back to the issues that the Church of Corinth is having with, you know, the pagan temples and the prominence of women, you know, creating disorder and more or less just causing issues in those locales, now coming back into the Church of Corinth and causing the same issues. I would say the way I could take, or the takeaway is, it's definitely relevant for the Church of Corinth, and I'm sure Corinth, and there's definitely parts of the passage that you could see as relevance now, but those particular ways or passages might not hold a relevance for modern day. I think if you go trying to tell an American woman to cover her head and not speak in, you know, the church, ask her husband later, you've kind of missed the point. So something, I don't even know if this was on the recording, the idea of the imperfect Bible. Oh no, what did he just say?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, you know, you can look at this as being almost an aspect of that, where, you know, Paul is writing to human beings in the Church of Corinth for something that is relevant for their time period, but isn't necessarily something that is relevant nowadays in our churches. Yes, there is plenty of things in the Bible that have lasted 2,000 years and are still relevant. The idea of, you know, how much wealth is too much, how you flaunt it, things like that, still relevant regardless of era. But something like that, I don't...
However, the overarching concept of having orderly worship, I think that's something that obviously still applies.
Still applies.
When you get into some of those nuanced details that had cultural implications, yeah, not so much.
Yeah. There's the idea of, you know, there should be order to your worship. Put some quotations around that order, because that could definitely be taken wrong as well. But, you know, it's like, there should be order to your worship. Women shouldn't be creating disorder. You can probably just remove any mention of, you know, a woman in there and just talk about actual orderly worship. You know.
I think, so this might just be semantics for us. I would either I'm pushing back on a concept that we all here might disagree with, or I'm just tightening up our words, because one, I would say I wouldn't use terms like perfect or imperfect Bible at all. Mm-hmm. I would say the Bible is perfectly the Bible. And that leaves us room for it is perfectly what it is meant to be. A tool that leads us to faith, but also God's revelation to us, but also human stories about our encounter of God. I mean, it has all these things, and it's for the purpose of our edification, right? The second thing I would say is the same thing about relevance and irrelevance. I would say something that's true is always relevant. So how it's relevant is going to change. Mm-hmm. So for instance, like that the group that Paul's talking about, what he's saying to them it has a certain kind of relevance at the time. For us, it leads us, it's still edifying because it tells us about Paul's thinking, mm-hmm. right? It tells us about some of the issues that they're going through. It can inform issues we're going through. We can still draw parallels or lessons, which was kind of what I think Ken was trying to say. We can still draw lessons from something, even though the time period and the cultural implications and all those things are different. So that's what I mean, that it can still be relevant, because I think if it were irrelevant, it wouldn't, number one, I would argue that, and this is besides as a Christian, I would say sociologically, it wouldn't have the power it still has. It still has the power to really kind of, when you read this, to really stir you up, to strike, it elicits a response of some kind from you. And I think it's because of its relevance. I mean, because it can go, what does that make me think or feel, or what do I do in response to it, or how am I living my life in a way that's reflective of what's going on here? But what is helpful is to sort of look at it in its proper place, and that's what I think this Bible study does and tries to do, is to put it in its context and say, well, listen, here are the issues Paul's dealing with in his day. You can't understand Paul's argument if you don't understand what's happening in his day. To a certain extent, that means our understanding will always be somewhat limited, right? Because our documentation of his day is, we might be seeing this through the lens of wealthy people, right? Not the Downton Abbey version of, you know, Corinth. That was just a shout out to Ken, because he's told me about that show. But you know, you may not be seeing this through the lens of the everyday common worker of Corinth, right? You're seeing this through the lens of wealthy people that, you know, how they were interacting with their culture at the time. So even then, we're limited, right? We don't know what every single class culturally is necessarily doing, although we have a picture. And I think, you know, that's where we have to be humble enough to allow other fields to inform us, to continue to learn and go, hey, by the way, we've made this discovery about these cultural practices that we're having at the time, and maybe they can inform our understanding now. But, you know, in another way, it's such a blessing to see Paul dealing with very practical issues. You know, it's somewhat of a rebuke when we're just caught up in the esoteric stuff of, you know, life in the church and theology. Paul, certainly there's theological element to Paul, but there's also, hey, how do we deal with this matter, right?
Which leads us to next one. I give Alan huge credit for creating these periodic tables of the
periodically
spiritual gifts and spiritual fruits, and you know,
yeah, he's going to send us those slides later. If you're interested, let us know.
But you know, and just this look at, like, okay, so you've got a group of people here who seem to be reveling in their spiritual gifts and not necessarily trying to allow the spiritual fruit of joy, peace, patience, love to kind of hone those gifts, to use them accurately. And as Alan so well pointed out, all of it is put in the context of a body, of a, you know, a working organism that is trying to accomplish something, you know, that these gifts ought not be used just to elevate one part of that body. and then leading into the love chapter.
Yeah, so I shared that with couples, if, you know, they don't pick a scripture passages, which is becoming more and more common as people are unfamiliar with the Bible. Of course, I read this passage. Oh, yeah, I love that. I've heard that at other weddings, right? They didn't even know it was in the Bible. I love choosing it because, on the one hand, it's coming out of a context where Paul's saying, by the way, even if you have all these spiritual gifts, you're the most moral person, you give to the poor, you're completely religiously devoted, and you have not love, it doesn't matter, right? And so it's a rebuke, actually. But secondly, it's also, by the way, this love is not a love you can cultivate. It's not a love you can produce. It's something God produces in you. And so I always love to flip it and sort of tell the couple, so you think you're madly in love today, and you're never going to do any wrong, and you're going to always never hurt each other, do you, you know, all these different things. And there's going to be a day where you do not feel loving, and you do not feel lovable. And it is on that day that I want to remind you that in 1 Corinthians, Paul is also saying, God is patient, God is kind, God endures, right? God suffers all. So it's a reminder to draw our strength from the love of God and not self-love. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested in getting married, let me know. Come see me and, you know, we can use this passage.
So but to tie that into... the overarching theory that...
in fact, if you call in the next 10 minutes, we'll give away a vacuum cleaner. You know, 1-800, get married fast.
So the overarching theory that Alan has presented us with is Paul's constantly writing about faith, hope, love, faith being belief and something formational. And hope being that thing in the future, love being present, that is. And if you tie that into Paul's teaching here, that love is the one thing that lasts, that will go beyond prophecy and everything else, then we look at, yes, it is the constant, present, now experience is love.
God in the now. Amen. Well, join us next time at 5:05 p.m. at Bull Bay Restaurant, Wednesday, 5:05 p.m., 900 North Orange Street. We're going to look at Paul's letters during the third missionary journey, part two. This is 2 Corinthians, or 3 Corinthians, depending on how you're counting it, and or 4 Corinthians, and Romans. What's the difference? And here's a takeaway question. What's the difference between justification and sanctification? And I'm wondering, do you want people to define that, or should we define that now and think about it? Okay, so what's the difference when you think about justification and sanctification? What's the difference? Join us next time.
And if you do, first 10 people that do it, get a terrible Scottish impression from Edwin.
Yes, and or a free wedding counseling, and if you call in the next 10 minutes, a vacuum cleaner. Thank you, Think and Drink Bible Study, 5:05 p.m., Wednesdays, 900 North Orange Street, Bull Bay.
Is that Vista?
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Riverfront Church Podcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.